We are completing and rounding off the Mishnah that we started a few weeks ago. Al shlosha dvorim ha'olam omed, al ha'torah, al ho'avoda, v'al gemilus chasodim. And we were explaining in detail how the world stands on Torah, and we've spent a few weeks discussing that. Today I want to finish off an idea that we started last week but didn't have a chance to finish, and to go into another idea. And then I think we will just about be finished with explaining the Torah part. Then we'll only have Avoda and Gemilus Chasodim to explain, which shouldn't take us as long. And therefore, in probably another 2-3 weeks, we will start the next mission, the Mirzasha. Okay. We were discussing the idea that Torah brings shalom to the world. And last week we explained in great detail, I'm not going to repeat it, shalom does not mean peace, serenity, quiet, the absence of arguments or disagreement. Shalom means perfection that comes from harmony, that comes from various things, even opposite things, working together. Okay. And Torah brings that harmony and perfection to the world. At least it should. And therefore, Talmidei Chachamim marvim shalom ba'olam. And since shalom is the vessel, lo motza kodesh baruch hu kli machzik bracha liyisrael ela hashalom. Shalom is the vessel through which God gives blessing to this world, because only when things work in harmony and there's perfection is there blessing. Blessing means that things increase. You only want things to increase if they're going okay. If you're having trouble with your appliance, you don't want it to become more troublesome. But if everything's working fine, you want it to increase and to intensify. So when everything in the world is working harmoniously and each thing is contributing what it's supposed to contribute, then you have a world that is fit for bracha. So with all of this, okay, I want to mention something which I think is important. We've mentioned it in the past, but there are new faces here, and there are people who have memories that lapse sometimes, and therefore it's kedai to mention again. Somebody once asked the Chofetz Chaim, I want to mention an idea in shalom, in this idea of harmony, of various things working together, and how more Torah helps to promote that. And that's the following. Somebody once asked the Chofetz Chaim, wouldn't it be better if all Jews were the same? Meaning, we all had the same minhagim, we all were the same ethnic background, there weren't Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, Chassidim, Misnagdim, and all different kinds of drachim and paths in Torah. Wouldn't it be better if everything was one way? The Chofetz Chaim said, why are you asking me that question? Why don't you ask the Tsar why he has so many different divisions in his armies? He has the army and the navy and the marines and the air force and the cavalry and the infantry, and they all have different uniforms and they all have different functions. Wouldn't it be cheaper and more streamlined if everybody did one thing, wore the same uniform, everybody was either in the air, in the water, or on the ground? You know what the Tsar will tell you? Yeah, his army would be much cheaper and more streamlined, but he'd never win a war. Because in order to win a war, I have to cover all bases. So too, said the Chofetz Chaim, we are God's army. And therefore, we need many, many different kinds of Jews to be able to cover all the bases to do the Ratzon Hashem in this world. And there have to be different drachim, different paths, different emphasis, which we'll get to in a second what that means. in order to do that. Now, the story doesn't say which way this person wanted everybody to be, but I'll tell you, his way. So, Shai, everybody should be the way I am. And that's what the Chafetz Chaim answered. Now, the Chafetz Chaim said something along these lines that explains a Gemara in the end of Tainis. Subsequently, somebody showed me that Rav Shlomo Eger already said this before. Not Shlomo Eger, but not Rav Kiv Eger. Kiv Eger's son, who was whatever. It was a Chassidish Rebbe. Maybe it was Rav Shlomo Eger. In any case, so he said the following. The Gemara says, in the future, God is going to make a grand circle for all the tzaddikim, and he's going to sit in the middle, and they're all going to dance around him and point to the middle and say, this is the God that we waited for. So they explain the following. And that is that in this world, there are many, many different kinds of tzaddikim who line up on that circle. There are tzaddikim who emphasize Torah learning. They also do chesed and they also daven. The world exists on Torah, avodah, and gemilas chasadim. So they also do avodah and they also do gemilas chasadim, but their main emphasis is Torah. Now, amongst them, there are all different kinds of paths of people who learn Torah. There are people who learn Torah deeply, and people who learn halacha, and people who learn agada. And then there are many different approaches to Torah learning. There's a Litvisha approach, and a Hungarian approach, and a Polish approach, and a Sfardish approach. Are different yeshivas. And in each of those approaches, there's different approaches. The Litvisha, there's Tells, and there's Mir, and there's Brisk, and they're not the same. A little bit different nuances in how they learn, and who the major people they follow in the learning, in the method of learning. So there are countless variations in people who are involved in learning. And then there are tzaddikim who emphasize davening. They learn and they do chesed, but davening is the ikar, right? They spend a good portion of their day davening and different tefillahs or whatever. Some of them daven loud and some low and some fast and some slow and some this nusach and some a different nusach. So there are many variations in the tzaddikim who emphasize davening. And then there are tzaddikim who emphasize chesed. That's their forte. They run organizations for poor people or for widows or for orphans or for sick people. Many, many different kinds of chesed, many different kinds of organizations that are headed by different tzaddikim. So if you put it all together, you have a plethora of different paths, legitimate paths in Yiddishkeit, different ways. As long as they're on the circle. Being on the circle means that you are faithful to the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, the oral Torah, the 13 principles of faith. You have a Masorah, a tradition that is bolstered and started by Talmidei Chachamim, by great people, and you can trace back your derech to those great people, then they are legitimate paths in Yiddishkeit. And they are what make Judaism beautiful, because a rainbow would be very dull if it had only one color. So it's the various colors that blend together that make it beautiful. So Yiddishkeit has many, many different drachim, many different legitimate paths. That doesn't mean that every path is legitimate. There are paths that are not on the circle. Not on the circle at all. They're not true to Torah Shebichsav or Torah Shebaal Peh. They have no Masorah. They're just innovations, new innovations. It also doesn't mean that every path that's on the circle is completely on the circle. No path is perfect. Everyone needs constantly to improve. There are negative things about every path, and positive things about every path. And as long as they're on the circle, then there's an idea of there is no shalom, it says, without tochacha, without rebuke. You can't have harmony and peace, peace meaning harmony and perfection, unless you also fine-tune and correct things. And you can't correct things unless you're told that things have to be corrected. Because usually you don't see them yourself, you have to hear it from somebody else. So any shalom that doesn't have rebuke is not shalom. So that doesn't mean that we just have to say live and let live and everybody can do what they want, do what you want, and that's fine. No. If you have different divisions in the army, and I'm in the army and you're in the navy, and I don't think you're doing your job right, then I have a mitzvah to tell you that. But we're all in this together. I'm not telling it to you because I don't like you. I'm not telling it to you because I think that you're something foreign to me. No, we're all in this together. And if you don't do your job right, I'm going to suffer. If I don't do my job right, you're going to suffer. So I can tell you how I think you should do your job better. You can tell me. And we'll do it out of love and concern, not out of the fact that I think that you're worthless or you don't really exist over here. A very big difference of rebuking somebody because you want to put them down or destroy them, or you mean it for their good, and you mean it for the common good. But that doesn't mean that you just live and let live and everybody's okay and whatever. No. It means that there's place for rebuke also. But as long as people are on the circle, basically, they may need to be fine-tuned. There may be areas in every path that need to be corrected. But they're still basically on the circle, says the Chafetz Chaim, or says Rabbi Akiva Eiger. L'asid lavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a big circle of all these tzaddikim. And there could be a tzaddik on this side of the circle who's 180 degrees away from another tzaddik, completely different paths. They're 180 degrees away from each other on the circle. Different paths. But where's God in the middle? And all of the radii, all of the paths from the circle, from the circumference of the circle to the middle are equal. That's what the Rav Amram is going to show. In this world, you have to have a derech. You have a mesorah. You have a family. You have a rebbe. Right? You have a city that you came from. Whatever it may be, you have to follow minag avos, minag hamakom. Everybody has to have a derech. You can't just be hefker. But you have to respect other people's drachim too, because there is room. When I left America, Howard Johnson's had, I think, 36 flavors. If there can be 36 flavors of ice cream, there can be a lot more flavors of Torah too. But they're all ice cream. If you would go to Howard Johnson's, right, and they would give you motor oil, right, that's not another flavor of ice cream. That's something foreign. So if it's a ice cream, it has the basic ingredients of ice cream, right? It has milk and cream and whatever. It just has different flavors in it, different fruit, that's fine. If it's something completely different, then that's not ice cream, right? If it's a derech that's approved, it is the based on Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh and the Yud Gimli Ikari Emunah. And there's a Mesorah that comes from Talmidei Chachamim, great people. There's a tradition. Then fine, then it's ice cream. This one has nuts, and this one has strawberries, and this one is vanilla, and this one's chocolate. That's okay. But if they're selling you motor oil, and they're purporting it to be ice cream, that's not okay. And there are things that are totally foreign to Yiddishkeit that have no Mesorah, and that are not true to Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh and the Yud Gimli Karim. And those are not legitimate paths to the Rabbanu Shalom. Okay. In any case, so, and how to know what falls into which category? So you have to ask somebody, right, who knows, go take it to a chemist and let him analyze, is this ice cream or is this motor oil? So same thing, you have to go to a person who knows, who can analyze a Talmud Chacham, go to your Rav, right, and find out, is this something that's ice cream, just a different flavor, or is this a motor oil? So in any case, but that is the ideal. So why do we live in a world where most people, okay, can't live up to that? And we all have our way or our derech, and we look down on other people, and we negate their derech, and it's only our way. Why is it? Why can't people live the way that the Chafetz Chaim said, or whatever, in an ideal situation? Why is it that everybody's being mevatel everybody else? That one's no good, and this one's no good, and only my derech is okay. A person has to be proud of his derech, but he doesn't have to negate somebody else's because of that. So why do we live in a world where everybody is throwing stones at everybody else and negating everybody else's? There's only one way, it's my way. So let me tell you what I think at least one of the problems is, and again I've said this before, but now we're saying it in the context of the world exists and stands on Torah. And because Torah brings harmony to the world, and harmony is perfection, and that is what brings bracha to the world, so the world stands on this. The more Torah you have, the more you have this kind of harmony. Let me explain to you why. First, let me tell you something that the Kotzker Rebbe said, and then we'll put it into perspective, and then we'll see why the world looks the way it does in the Frum community. Why Frum Jews can't get together and can't live together. The Kotzker said two things that I think go together. He said the following. He said it in Yiddish. In English it sounds ridiculous, and in Hebrew it sounds still okay. And in Yiddish, if I said it in Yiddish, I'd break my teeth, and I don't have that many to spare, so I am going to say it in Hebrew. He said the following. Im ani ani, mipnei sha'ani ani, v'ata ata, mipnei sha'ata ata, oz ani ani v'ata ata. Aval im ani ani mipnei sha'ata ata, v'ata ata mipnei sha'ani ani, oz ein ani ani v'ein ata ata. Meaning the following. If I'm me, because I know who I am, and you're you, because you know who you are, so we both have an identity. I'm me and you're you. You know who you are, I know who I am, and that creates an identity of each of us. But if I'm me only because I know I'm not you, I don't know who I am, but I know I'm not you. And you're you only because you know you're not me. You don't know who you are, but you know you're not me. Then you're not you and I'm not me, because we have no identity. An identity is only if it's positive. If it's negative, I don't know who I am, but I know I'm not you. That's not called an identity. First thing he said. Second thing he said is, the Gemara says, Binyan Noorim Stira. When foolish youngsters build, it's tearing down. And Stira Zakenim Binyan. And when wise people tear down, it's building. Now the simple meaning of that is that sometimes building things is really destroying. You're building the wrong things. And sometimes destroying things that have to be destroyed is really building. That's the real meaning. Now comes the Kotzker and says, no, you can look at it a little bit differently. Binyan Na'arim, you know how a foolish, immature person builds himself up? By stira, by knocking other people down. You can build yourself up in one of two ways. You can elevate yourself above other people, or you can leave yourself the way you are and knock the other people into the ground. Either way, you're going to be higher than them. But in one way you're elevating yourself, the other way you're knocking other people down. Foolish, immature people build themselves up by knocking other people down. And wise people knock the things down in this world that have to be knocked down by building themselves up, not by knocking other people down. You build yourself up, the things that are not proper will fall to the wayside. That's what he said. Now let's put these two things together in the following perspective. We live in a world, unfortunately, where many people don't know who they are. Yiddishkeit-wise. I'm not the psychiatrist, and I'm not interested in, you know, what's it called, giving you psychiatric advice about knowing yourself or whatever. I'm talking about Yiddishkeit. They have no idea what their Mesorah is, or if they even have a Mesorah. Right? Most of us, if you brought, you were brought up frum, you grew up in a frum family, you have minig ofos. Your parents came from somewhere, they had a minig, they were Hungarians, they were Polaks, they were Litvaks, they had rabbonim that were parts of communities from where they came from in Europe or whatever, or in North Africa or whatever, and they had a Mesorah. They had a Mesorah. You're an Ashkenazi, you're a Svardi, you're a Litvak, you're a Polak, you're a Hungarian, and that the Yiddishkeit had a Mesorah. And people knew what their Mesorah was, what their Minhagim were, who their Gedolim were, or whatever. If you weren't born into a frum family, so then you chose a Mesorah, usually because of the people who educated you or directed you and became your Rebbeim. So they became your surrogate family, your surrogate Mesorah. But everybody has to have some Mesorah, because Yiddishkeit doesn't start with anybody. It started way back from Avraham Avinu and Har Sinai. So if someone knows their Mesorah, who they are and what they are, so then they don't have to feel threatened by other people. They have an identity. I know who I am. And I don't have to knock other people down because I don't feel threatened by them. But if I don't know who I am, I don't know what my Mesorah is. I can only identify myself by who I'm not. Well, I'm not that. We don't do that. We're not them. We don't dress like that. Right? And that's the way, unfortunately, we educate our children many times. Right? We don't teach them who they are, but we teach them who they're not. Well, we're not them. We're not them. We're not them. So fine, they know who they're not, but they don't know who they are. And when you know who you're not and not who you are, you don't have an identity, and then you feel threatened by other people, intimidated. So in order to make yourself feel secure, you have to knock down all those other people that you're not. So that's why there's so much, because we don't identify ourselves in any meaningful way, but for the most part, we identify ourselves by external things. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so being a rabbi from Chutz La'aretz, I didn't really fit in, I still don't really fit in, exactly in any of the polarized groups over here. Okay. So each group decided that they want, you know, to pull me to their side and convince me that what they represent is more what I'm used to in Chutz La'aretz, you know, a Haredi Chutz La'aretz person, rather than what here is in Eretz Yisrael. So one of my daughter's teachers in a PTA meeting, right, sat down with me and my wife, and instead of talking about my daughter's progress in school, started to lecture me on what Eretz Yisrael was like and what I should know, where we really fit in. So she told me the following. She said that you should know anybody who wears a black yarmulke in this country is anti-social, anti-Israel, anti just about everything, and that's not what you're used to in Chutzlah, but that's what it represents here. Now this is before virtual, you know, reality, right, where you could put on a helmet and see a virtual world. So I said, I find it hard to believe that just putting on a black yarmulke, right, creates that result, and everybody who wears a black yarmulke has that mindset. I really find that difficult to believe. No, she said, you'll see. You're fresh over here. You'll see. Okay. I never saw that. But in any case, that's what she said. And you know, as I do wear a black yarmulke. Maybe I'm anti-everything also, but I don't think so. Okay, in any case. Okay, so that was one approach, one side. Then, a few weeks later, my son came home from Cheder, and he tells me, Tati, he must have been about 11, 9 or 11, somewhere around there, between 9 and 11. Tells me, Tati, the Rebbe told us today that anyone who wears a kippah sruga, a knitted yarmulke, can't be a Yirei Shamayim. It's impossible. Impossible. That's what his Rebbe told him. Okay, I don't know why you didn't gasp at the first one. It was just as bad. In any case, no, that's what the Rebbe told him in school. I said, why? He said, because the Rebbe said, because the Yiras Shamayim escapes through the holes. Now, I didn't want to contradict his Rebbe, because that's not a good thing to do with a child, to tell him that his Rebbe's wrong, but his Rebbe was wrong. So what I did is the following. I said to my son, I said, I find that very hard to believe. Because last week I was in Meir Shorim, and all Rebarulis Hasidim, Toldus Aaron Hasidim, wear these big white knitted yarmulkes. Now, I can't believe that there's not one Rebarulis Hasid who's a Yiras Shamayim. Is that what your Rebbe's saying? He said, no, 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 there's exceptions. I said, fine, let's leave it at that. That's not the yarmulke that determines whether you have Yiras Shamayim or not. It's what's under the yarmulke. And it's possible to wear a yarmulke with holes and the Yiras Shamayim shouldn't escape. That's all. That's all. More than that, you don't have to know. Just there's exceptions. Manili, you always have to check to find out, is this the exception or not? So you can't judge by the yarmulke. You have to judge by the person. That's all. Got the message across, and that was that. Okay, so that's what the world is like, right? We judge people completely on their external thing, and we make our decisions, right? Some people make their decision about people who wear this kind of yarmulke, and people make a decision about people who wear a different kind of yarmulke, and most certainly if you wear some rainbow yarmulke or whatever, you're really off the derech, or whatever.
You must have been confused because you had a few children to go to the parent teachers meeting. Wow.
Okay, so in any case, so why is it like that? Because we don't know who we are. Because we identify ourselves by our chitzonius, how we dress. You know, the Chafetz Chaim gives a marshal. His marshal really is to something else, but it fits beautifully to what I'm talking about, so I'm going to use it for my purposes. Chafetz Chaim says, there was once a person who was driving in the snowstorm, in a horse and wagon, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning. He just couldn't go on anymore. He couldn't see in front of him. He was dead tired, and he was afraid that who knows what, he'd fall asleep at the wheel of the horse with who knows what. In any case, so he stopped at an inn, and he asked the innkeeper if he could have a bed to rest, just to close his eyes for 2 hours. That's all. The innkeeper said, I'm sorry, but there's not an empty bed, not an empty room in this inn. Every room is taken. He says, okay, is there an empty bed? Maybe you have a room with 2 beds, and somebody is there, a single man, and there's an empty bed. Can I, you know, share a room with somebody? He said, no, we have only one room like that. And a very, very hush of a general reserved that room, and he paid for both beds. And he wants to be alone. And the guy said, look, the general's asleep, isn't he? Yeah. Generals don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, right? Right. I just want to sleep there from 2 to 4. I'll creep in quietly, sleep in the other bed. I won't wake him up. I'll leave without waking. He'll never know anybody was there. I'll pay you double for the bed, okay? He'll never know that anybody was there, and you make double the money. The innkeeper says, yeah, but what if the general wakes up? He says, don't worry, I'll be like a mouse. I'll get in, get out quickly. He says, okay, you gotta promise me, I'm gonna come up at 4 o'clock in the morning and shake you. You better get up quietly, get dressed, and get out of there immediately so the general doesn't get up, okay? So he sleeps for 2 hours. The innkeeper comes at 4 a.m, shakes him. Nobody says a word. Tells him fast, get up. He gets dressed fast and runs out of the room. As he's running out of the room, he passes a mirror in the hall, and he sees that he's wearing the general's clothing. In his haste, he put on the general's clothing instead of his own. He thinks to himself, he says, that idiot innkeeper, he woke up the general and forgot to wake me up. Says the Chafetz Chaim, just because you are wearing the general's clothing does not mean you are the general. The clothing do not make the person. Clothing is important. It's a uniform. It says something. It reflects who you are. If I didn't think clothing was somewhat important, I wouldn't be dressed in this getup for sure. Right? So obviously, clothing says something. Right? It shows your uniform. If I was a policeman, I would come here in a police uniform. Right? If I was a fireman, I'd wear a fire uniform. If you want more about this, you can look in Uncle Moishi. He has a whole thing about uniforms. But I'm a rabbi, and this is a rabbi's uniform in Eretz Yisrael. So I wear this uniform. It tells you who I am, right? If I came here dressed in a white coat or whatever, either I'd be a doctor or the good humor man, and you would not seek halacha from me, but either ice cream or an operation. So I don't come dressed in a white coat. I came in this, so you know that you can seek Torah from me, halacha, whatever it may be. Right? Unfortunately, when people see this, they think of something else. Recently, I went, spent the Shabbos in Ranana. So I got directions to the house I was supposed to be staying at. We came there, myself and my wife, 2 hours before Shabbos, knocking on the door. Nobody answers the door. Completely ring the bell. Couldn't figure out why. These people are supposed to be expecting us to be their guests for Shabbos. We're staying here for this Shabbaton. Nobody's there. Finally, about a 9-10-year-old girl comes to the door, and she puts out her hand with a 10-shekel coin in it, and she says, "My mother said this is all we have." I said, "Wait a second, you got this all wrong. We're supposed to be staying here for Shabbos." She said, "Oh, you probably want 21 aleph. This is 21. And then, so you can see that sometimes being dressed the way that I am has a different connotation of uniform than this. It was worse than that. I once went back to Miami. I was a rabbi there for many years. I grew up in Miami. I came back about 2 years after I left, and I didn't remember where a family lived who I was supposed to be eating supper by them. So I knocked on a door where I saw mezuzahs. I knew it was a Jewish home. And knocked on the door and to ask directions of where this people lived. And the woman opened the curtain, looked out, and she said, "My husband's not home, and he already gave at the office." I said to myself, "I haven't been only away 2 years, and nobody remembers me here anymore." In any case, so sometimes the uniform says something different than you imagine it to say, but it's a uniform. And it's important, but it doesn't make you. If you wear a policeman's uniform, you are not a policeman. And if you wear a white coat, you don't become a doctor. You have to go to school to become a doctor. You have to have practice to become a doctor. Then you can wear the white coat and it means something. But putting on a white coat does not make you a doctor. And putting on a black coat doesn't make you a rabbi either. So we've come to this situation where we think that if we're wearing the general's clothing, that's enough. But it's not enough. You have to know who you are, what you are. Why do you wear that yarmulke? What's the mesorah? What is it? Are you a chassid? What kind of chassid? Are you misnagid? What kind of... What? And if we would know who we are, we teach our children who they are, so they'd have an identity, then they wouldn't feel that they had to knock other people down to give themselves an identity. They would be able to feel secure and be able to understand that there could be other people with different identities, but this is my Mesorah, this is what I'm proud of, this is what I am. And what I'm proud of needs sometimes correction, and what other people are proud of need correction. But that doesn't mean we can't all be on the same circle. We can't respect each other. But if you don't know who you are, and you don't know what your Mesorah is, then that leads to tremendous problems. And therefore, a person who knows more Torah, the more Torah you learn, the more you understand who you are, what you are, what your Mesorah is, the more you don't feel intimidated by other people, and then the more shalom there is in the world, more harmony. Then there can be harmony amongst different people. And I once wanted to learn that from the following story in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Reb Shimon bar Yochai was 12 years in a cave, running away from the Roman government, hiding in a cave, and all he did during those 12 years, together with his son Reb Elazar, was learn Torah and every once in a while daven. But even that, he learned Torah all the time. Once in 30 days they davened a little bit, because they were totally involved in Torah. 12 years straight. They ate charuvim, boxer, right? And they had a spring that miraculously grew up both of these things. That's how they lived. 12 years. And then a bas kol went out, leave the cave. It's safe. All clear. You can leave the cave. The people who wanted to kill you from the Roman government are no longer alive. Everything's okay. You can leave. They left. And when they left, they saw people farming, plowing, planting, being involved in material pursuits. And wherever they looked, they burned up the place. They just were too critical. How in the world could people be involved in mundane things? You could be learning Torah. What are you doing? Wasting your time. Right? We existed in a cave for 12 years. We didn't have to plow, plant. The Rebbe provided for us. Same thing will happen to you if you'll be the same way. Why are you wasting your time? They burnt up everywhere they looked. So another heavenly voice resounded. I didn't let you out of the cave to destroy my world. Get back in the cave. Nope. They went back in the cave for another year. They came out of the cave, and wherever Rebbe Elazar looked, he still was burning up. The kid, the youngster, was still burning up. He couldn't take it. Were they wasting their time? But Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai now healed the areas that his son burnt up. Two things bothered me about this Gemara. Firstly, if I were to ask you why Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai and Rebbe Elazar were so critical, what caused them to be overly critical of people who were just doing what's normal, but they expected them to be on the high level they were on and couldn't forgive them to be on a lower level, right? What caused that? What would you say? Being in a cave 12 years, only learning Torah, and being separated from society. That's what caused it. No, they were obviously separated from society, and they were on a tremendously high level, and therefore they were very, critical, but more than that, intolerant. Therefore they were intolerant. They couldn't tolerate what the normal world was like because they were on such a much higher level for 12 years. If that's the case, and that's L'chor is the case, then what's sending them back in the cave for another year going to help? That's going to make it worse. Send them to Miami. Send them to Los Angeles for a year. Right? That'll calm them down. Then they'll become more tolerant. Right? But don't send them back to the cave. How in the world is it going to solve the problem by sending them back to the cave? I learned from that a very important lesson. People are not intolerant because they know too much. People are intolerant because they don't know enough. Not because they learn too much. The more you learn, the more you'll understand how to look at things properly. The bigger the gadol, the much more his look is much more tolerant. Much more tolerant. Right? And even if you hear things from gedolim that seem to be intolerant, but lamaisa in the bigger picture, those gedolim are much more tolerant than anybody you can imagine. But you have to be a gadol. So the more Torah you learn, the more you're able to understand and accept other people. So it wasn't that they spent too much time in the cave that made them the way they were. If they didn't spend enough time, go back another year. That's the first thing I learned. Secondly, why didn't they send Rebbe Elazar back after the second year? He still was burning things up. Now it was okay to stay out and burn things up. The answer is, a person has to have two eyes. One critical and one tolerant. You have to be able to criticize, because if you don't, you'll never correct anything in this world that needs to be corrected. But you have to also have the eye that takes that criticism and makes it positive, constructive criticism, not destructive. So if you have a partnership between the older Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai, older people are usually more mellow, more tolerant, they've seen things in life, they're able to understand things, and youngsters are usually hotheads and very critical, and they don't know yet how to look at things in a more perfect way. So as long as you have Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon Yochai as a partnership, this one is critical and this one knows how to take that criticism and make it constructive, then that's fine. When both of them are burning things up, or both of them are very tolerant, then there's a problem. You need two eyes. One this way, and you have to have a balance between them. So that is another way that the world stands on Torah, because the world can't stand without shalom and shlemus, without harmony, and the more Torah you learn, the more you're able to bring that harmony into the world, as we explain. Next week we'll go into one or two more aspects of Torah, and then we'll spend one or two shiurim on avoda and gemilas chasadim, and Amir Hashem, then we will be ready for the next mission. Okay.